And the next agenda item is contaminants of emerging concern, quality in the North Coast. Jeremiah Puget and Kathy Goodwin.
Good afternoon. Chairman Corbett, members of the board, I'm Jeremiah Puget, environmental scientist of your staff. I'll be giving the presentation alone today, but I did want to thank, in particular, staff Kathy Goodwin and Lauren Clyde in their development of this presentation. I went ahead and as you recall, took the responsibility of carrying this forward before you all today. So, as directed by Board Member Massey in recent meetings, going back to the adoption of the City of Santa Rosa's NPDES permit, he asked our Executive Officer, Matt St. John, to put together a work group in comparing constituents of emerging concerns, endocrine disrupting compounds between Region 1 and 2 to understand these issues a little bit better. The purpose of the internal work group is to both collect existing information and to participate in further regional assessments. In today's presentation, I'm going to run about 15 to 20 minutes myself. We're going to talk about defining the problem, looking at sources, what wastewater treatment can achieve in this, and what the Water Board is doing to look more closely at this issue. I'd also like to highlight that we'll be looking at the impacts of improper disposal. So when we're referring to constituents of emerging concern, you'll hear a lot of interchangeable terminology, chemicals of emerging concern, compounds of emerging concern, all referring to a broad umbrella of chemicals or a wide variety of products that are out there. Two noteworthy ones that we're going to discuss a little bit more today are pharmaceuticals and personal care products. When you look at this slide, you will be able to see that there's a variety of terms and potential human and ecological issues associated with these, and giving examples. Now, the terms like drugs and pharmaceuticals are very straightforward and familiar to us. However, pharmaceuticals and personal care products comprise a diverse collection of thousands of chemical substances, including prescription and over-the-counter therapeutic drugs, veterinary drugs, fragrances, cosmetics. Still, this doesn't even complete the list that we know to be out there today. And studies have shown that CECs are present in our nation's water bodies, and further research suggests that certain drugs may cause ecological harm. Personal care products and pharmaceuticals have probably been in our environment and in the nation's waters for as long as humans have been using them. These compounds are passed through wastewater streams, surface water, and groundwater, and are also excreted through inadequately absorbed processes. So when we're talking about emerging pollutants, we're also talking about emerging knowledge. The human health effects of CECs are not yet fully understood. Chemicals of emerging concern are present in many products that we use every day, including medications, vitamins, and cleaning products. The U.S. Geological Survey has a significant and ongoing research program to better understand the sources of CECs, the pathways into the environment, fate and transport of these ecological exposures on biological receptors, such as humans, fish, and plants. The USGS is also, U.S. Geological Survey, is also involved in the development of methods to detect these CECs in the environment. So who else is studying the problem? The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the San Francisco Estuary Institute, SFEI, and the Southern California Coastal Watershed Research Project. Feel free to catch me if I throw out too many acronyms at you guys as I try to condense these throughout the presentation. The U.S. EPA and the USGS are committed to investigating this topic and developing strategies to help both the regulatory and the public sectors understand the potential side effects from these. The San Francisco Estuary Institute is a very active party in this project, and one of the reasons why we're focusing on Region 2 as well. I'll add some more about SFEI later on in this presentation, and in conjunction with the Southern California Coastal Water Research Project, again, SCWRP, is working with State Board on a variety of different projects. Yeah, that's a good one, right? has been, they've been investing a lot of time and a lot of professional expertise on their staff are numerous microbiologists, toxicologists, and a great number of experts. Really, this is just a quick short list of all the many governmental entities, non-governmental organizations, and a long list of specialized team members that are looking at this. Again, biochemists, toxicologists, and analytical chemists also can be added to the list of experts looking at this situation. Research projects do involve the collaboration of many academia universities, such as Arizona, Colorado School of Mines, Florida, UC Davis, UC Berkeley, and many sanitation districts also down in Southern California. So pathways to the environment. In the coming slides, we're going to focus a little bit more on wastewater and landfills, as that's somewhat of our bailiwick, but I'd like to point out that this a similar presentation was prepared and presented by our executive officer, Matt St. John, to the Russian River Watershed Association Safe Medicine Disposal Symposium, in which Matt promoted the importance of safe medicine disposal and diverting these potential contaminants away from our waste streams into wastewater systems and landfills. Safe medicine disposal reduces environmental exposures. Because most CECs don't dissolve easily or evaporate at normal temperatures or pressures, they make their way into the aquatic environment via sewage, sludge, irrigation with reclaimed water, through permitted discharges, they find their way into the environment. Historically, wastewater treatment plants have been designed to remove conventional pollutants such as organic materials and solids. They're not specifically designed to remove or reduce the myriad of toxic pollutants, personal care products, or pharmaceuticals. And currently, the state of California does not directly regulate CECs because, our knowledge is still emerging on this topic and is still developing. However, the state has begun to assess potential water quality impacts related to CECs, and I'll say a little bit more about this as we talk about what the state is doing. But I would like to focus a little bit on that we have seen information and studies. One in particular that I appreciated was from the Washington Department of Ecology, and where they were able to show that conventional treatment does remove personal care products and pharmaceuticals to some degree. Enhanced biological and nutrient removal techniques in combination with filtration are definitely more effective than traditional activated sludge or pond-based systems. Some treatment technologies like ozonation or reverse osmosis have been effective at treating close to 100% of CECs. Some of these options have been implemented successfully around the nation and at wastewater treatment plants actually throughout the world. Associated with CECs, chemicals of emerging concerns, are EDCs, endocrine disrupting compounds. They're known to induce hormone responses. Feminization has been noted. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the upcoming slides. But examples of EDCs, endocrine-disrupting compounds, include female hormones, pesticides, organochlorine compounds, and phthalate esters. The concern over CECs became prevalent due to observations that aquatic organisms, such as fish and frogs, were showing signs, as I indicated before, of feminization and mutation. Studies have shown over the last 10 years that we've detected trace amounts of CECs in wastewater effluent, in rivers, in lakes, and in groundwater. While environmental concentrations are typically below acute toxicity levels, the main concern is the chronic or synergistic effects that we may be dealing with here. The specific cause of on aquatic exposures or the response to those are still being studied, and the effects on reproductive biology and malformation have been, as I noted previously, they've been documented. Sorry, repeating that. Also, concentrations in the development of antibiotic-resistant bacteria populations. So we've seen a study in the increased resistance to antibiotic effectiveness due to its widespread presence in the environment. So it's in this context of CECs that we should evaluate our own understanding and mental models of what constitutes acute and chronic toxicity. Studies show that endocrine disrupting compounds can have low dose effects on hormone systems of aquatic species. Rather than the dose response paradigm that we're typically used to thinking about, we might want to begin to think about CECs as a bit how we think about carcinogens, and that they have these cumulative and synergistic effects. And therefore, we should remain open to the options of how we proceed forward with monitoring and potential regulation of such compounds. What can be done? What can we do to address this problem? Well, first of all, proper disposal of pharmaceuticals and personal care products is the most significant step. It's also at this point we would like to thank, as I mentioned before, our Executive Officer Matt St. John presented to RRWA. We'd really like to thank them for being leaders throughout the community and helping promote and properly dispose of tons of medicines over the last few years. On an annual basis, they're collecting an enormous amount of these. So this takes us to the old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. While agencies like the US EPA and the USGS have developed and are continuing to develop analytical methods for the ever-expanding universe of CECs, there is still limited information and guidance on how they may be adversely affecting beneficial uses. Recognizing that consideration of CEC's effect on human health and aquatic life is rapidly evolving field, and that regulatory requirements need to be based on best available science. As part of the recycled water policy, the State Water Board convened a panel of experts to assist with the development of monitoring programs to coincide with the use of recycled water. And they put together an expert panel. And that expert panel's final report, they recommended the use of indicators or surrogates to prevent the need of a very costly and long list of analytes of the various CECs. I'll mention later on, but even though we know that there's a wide variety of them out there, we still only have analytical methods for a narrow spectrum, around 200. Additionally, the panel recommended the use of bioanalytical assays, exposure of living organisms to substances, then evaluating a biological response in these organisms. A recent presentation on this to the State Water Board, staff and folks from SCWRP, the Southern California Coastal Research Water Project, provided that some information on the study of bioanalytical tools. Still grappling with how we use bioassays and results in a monitoring context, the obvious conclusion was that this is a process that we must develop monitoring thresholds, and then they must be established clearly. And that when we're considering the latest information and we need to consider the differences in expected potency on a cellular response between to a whole organism or a human response, and that we should also take into account these safety factors. I think the upshot that State Board staff gave to me was that they looked at a number of commercially available tools that were out there to look at hormone responses, and while they put together protocols and procedures to use this in a water quality context, they aren't quite ready for prime time. A few maybe, and that's promising, but they're still looking at that. In addition to that study, is a study that was focusing primarily on groundwater through the GAMMA program, in which folks at UC Davis cooperated with the State Board staff and contractors to further refine our understanding of how these tools are. Fortunately, they're still dealing with 75% certainty, so still developing these tools as we speak. I'd like to focus a little bit on this USGS landfill study that we came across recently in our group work assessment of information that we could find readily available. And as previously mentioned, they have been working on methods to detect CECs in the environment. In addition to conducting the first national landfill assessment, as they went to 19 different landfills across America, they were looking at leachate. They found 129 CECs out of the list of 200 that they were looking for. The findings indicate that they were in the parts per billion range, so they don't have they obviously weren't coming out at, there was a little dilution there. They weren't coming out as concentrations that one would expect to consume when prescribed. However, we don't yet know or have any information on the criteria of these environmental or ecosystem effects that are very low. Another study of interest that we'd like to point out that we've recently become aware of and staff have been looking into is this USGS study of the Russian River. They took a look at 14 river sites, 8 tributaries, some groundwater samples, a wastewater treatment plant, and a terrace pit. And we found caffeine, anti-seizure medication, acetaminophen, which I don't know if you've heard, I'm on a healthy dose of myself today due to a little cold that's running around the family. Found some herbicides, and they found some interesting stuff in sediment samples as well. We have that if you'd like to go into more detail. Again, these were very low concentrations, somewhat at detection limits in the parts per billion range, and even at estimated concentrations, meaning kind of hovering around that J flag area where we're not entirely sure if that's the compound they're seeing or not. Yet, there were a few strong hits of caffeine down on the lower Russian. Also noteworthy, as I mentioned before, is the effort put together by the San Francisco Estuary Institute and their regional monitoring program. The findings reiterate not only the presence of contaminants like caffeine and ibuprofen in our waters, but their use of surrogates as well. And that's what they've been doing to kind of reiterate the findings of the Recycled Water Policy's expert panel on using surrogates as opposed to these larger, more expensive analyte lists that EPA and USGS have. It's helpful, though, when we look at the findings that they have to understand that, you know, take, for example, the flame retardants that have been used and are being phased out of consumer production in the last decade. With the phasing out of these chemicals, we've seen a decrease in their concentrations in the bay. So it's great to understand that the source control and the role that source control plays in this issue that we all face. I'd also like to mention one of the things we learned that they have really done a good job of is this tiered approach on the development of potential management measures for the higher risk compounds as opposed to the and also monitoring of those compounds, again, use of surrogates or whatnot. One of the big things that we are excited to share with you, though, and something to look forward to in the next year is our regional surface water ambient monitoring program. We'll be conducting work in conjunction with SQRP to conduct CEC monitoring in the Russian River. Again, this site was chosen by the state primarily because it is one of the most urbanized watersheds that we have in our region, in addition to one of the watersheds to where we really have the most numerous point source discharges directly to the water body. The questions that we're hoping to answer in this survey are CECs in wastewater treatment plant effluent, stormwater runoff present. What are the relative contributions from treated wastewater effluent into stormwater? Do bioanalytical assays effectively screen for CECs in the watershed? And what's the extent and magnitude of CECs present in the water column sediments and fish tissue, all trying to build off the information that we've learned so far? In addition to that, finally, we're looking at what pesticides applied in the Russian River watershed would be of the highest priority for future monitoring. So in closing, the scope and magnitude of this problem is daunting, and under the hundreds of thousands of known chemicals, nearly 84,000 industrial chemicals commercially available, 9,000 food additives, 3,000 cosmetic ingredients, over 3,000 pharmaceuticals, according to the U.S. EPA. Only a fraction of these are regulated by the numerous government bodies that exist throughout the nation. However, the scientific community and the regulatory sectors are engaging this issue with a data-driven and a health risk-based approach. Government regulation alone will not fully address this issue. Pollution prevention and stewardship programs are less costly than remediation. As such, issues continue to become more complex and research more limited. The Regional Water Board will continue to actively seek out partnerships with other agencies. Again, as I mentioned, the Russian River Watershed Association and our gratitude towards the efforts they've put in there. Also with the municipalities, other local entities, to leverage our common resources and collaboratively come up with a solution. The SFEI, San Francisco Estuary Institute, I catch myself as I throw those out there, sorry. Regional Monitoring Program provides an excellent model of collaboration, and it's in this context that we want to continue to develop a regional monitoring program right here in our own backyard and make this a successful effort with others participating. And hopefully it'll be an informative endeavor as well. While we play a significant role in protecting beneficial uses, the Regional Water Board will not be able to regulate our way out of this problem. This is a dilemma much larger than just the treatment of end of pipe or the application of recycled water. This is the tip of an iceberg that will require strong partnerships. Particularly as we move on, we will be looking towards agencies like the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the U.S. Geological Survey, the California Office of Environmental Health Hazard, Department of Toxic Substances, to give us toxicity information and criteria so we need to do our job of protecting beneficial uses and implementing the appropriate water quality objectives. And this is a topic that remains to be continued. Do I have any questions from the board members? That concludes my presentation.
Maybe I need a Prozac right now after hearing that. Jeremiah, that was excellent. It is an overwhelming, I'm just sitting here absorbing what you were sharing, and the enormity of the task is overwhelming. I can see the headlines now. Don't give your kids coffee or cola, caffeine in the water. I mean, it's huge, right? I was particularly interested when you touched on the issue of source control, and I immediately jumped to, you know, source control versus persistence of these products, half-life of these products. Are people looking at, you know, the relative value of source control versus how long some of these products persist in the environment? Do some of these have a half-life of several months, maybe even a year, or will they break down more quickly? So, again, trying to understand the approach. We're not going to stop everybody from drinking coffee and losing caffeine. And like you say, people are doing it properly, but still, it's a challenge. The issue of half-life, you know, and persistence. How long do some of these products, particularly the pharmaceuticals, how long do they stay out there? And obviously no one's done the work on all of it. How do we even start to address those kinds of questions?
Well, I appreciate that question, Greg. I think that's the kind that we need to continue to ask. As you may expect, I don't particularly have a good answer for that one. I think that it is a multi-pronged approach. We know that there is effectiveness in source control, and we're going to continue to look at the literature, and others are going to continue to stay involved in what is the persistency and the fate and transport. We're still beginning to really put our arms around the understanding of all the information that's coming towards us on this. And again, I think I failed to mention that of all the hundreds of thousands of chemicals being developed, the reality is that at average 3% of those a year increase. And so when we have BPA finally phased out of the market, we now have BPB and BPS. Now what? It's kind of a circle.
I absolutely appreciate the fact that we have many more unknowns than we have knowns, but I would like to thank Mr. St. John and yourself for doing this, and part of it was Ms. Edelman has been watching this for some time now, and she was as much the driving force behind asking for this, and so I would also thank you, Brenda, for giving us the impetus to look at this stuff. I don't know that we get any answers other than it is it's overwhelming, it's there, and it is the effect of having human beings that live longer, and when there are more of us, all of that impacts it. And I don't know, I don't have an answer for it, but I'm glad that you were looking at it. And with that, I will Mr. St. John.
I just wanted to emphasize that the monitoring program that was developed in consultation with the Southern California Coastal Research Project, under contract to SWAMP. But we are the first region that's implementing that monitoring program. So we're actually kind of on the leading edge in terms of implementing the most up-to-date monitoring recommendations associated with CECs.
So we can expect the answers by the end of the year. Hallelujah.
It'll take a little longer than that. And we really will be looking to our partners like the San Francisco Estuary Institute to help us develop and then implement further monitoring programs.
We asked for it, and thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, Jeremiah, can you pass on, please? You mentioned the USGS. There was a study in there. Could you pass on just a link or a notation for what that is? If swamp monitoring does happen, of course, I expect we'll see that sooner. I had a question a while back from the city of Santa Rosa because there was an interpretation a while back that we were going to make them use reverse osmosis to take out CECs. And the one point that the person that was talking to me was trying to make is the amount of energy and the footprint and the greenhouse gas footprint that would take to run that much RO. It's very interesting because, as I know, the Santa Rosa system, there's a tremendous amount of that water that is injected into the mantle field up there at the geysers, and I surely don't think that, you know, removing COCs for mantle material disposal, basically, and generating green power then is maybe appropriate. But maybe from a risk-based standpoint, it may be appropriate in other areas, for other uses maybe. I don't know. At the same time, I see the state is absolutely moving towards the reuse of water. It is the water that is being developed and available for use, and we're doing that in abundance now. And yet there's a lot we don't know here, just recognizing that. And there's implications of this all the way around. And yeah, that acetaminophen you took this morning because you're janky and all that, but right. We're all part of that problem, right? I mean, we all, it's not just the disposal of stuff into landfills. And I'll note, by the way, that leachate study that was done by USGS, that we have landfills in this region that discharge leachate, tremendous amounts of leachate to POTWs, right? That's happening.
Yes.
For treatment and disposal. And there it is.
Well, I thank you for pointing that out. I appreciate the nod to all the volume of water that does go up that hill, and that we really are proceeding along cautiously, but really looking at trying to figure out a little bit more before we turn that regulatory dial on treatment plants.
So, to Jeremiah, you know, the state I know had a blue ribbon panel. Was that concluded? Is that done? Do they have more to do?
I could have been a little more explicit in that, David, in that as Matt was also hinting at, this is an ongoing effort,
right.
and we are now a part of the output of that in the future, an upcoming Russian River study. They're still working with all those toxicologists and those people that sat on the panel from Squirp, and the more you look into it, the more you'll find. There's really a lot of information out there, and we're making progress. The state board themselves, if I failed to mention it, are going to be forming, like we have internally, our own internal working group led by Matt that has a diverse backgrounds from scientists to geologists to engineers, from planning to wastewater treatment to groundwater cleanup. The state board is also going to be convening a work group roundtable so we can be sharing both statewide, international, and both local lessons learned. And that's really the most effective way in today's ability to spread information and knowledge that we're going to be successful in kind of putting a dent and understanding the true risk here.
Well, and you know, surely keep it surprised as you go.
Indeed.
Right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Board members, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
We'll open it up to the public. Brenda Adelman.
I don't know if you want the sick chair.
Brenda Adelman, Russian River Watershed Protection Committee. I want to thank you profusely for taking this on. I think it's incredible that you're willing to take it seriously, and I appreciate very much the work staff is doing. I wish I could be a fly on the wall, but in any case, the report was excellent. In fact, I thought it was much better than the written report because I had a few concerns that were addressed. And now I'm just going to kind of fill in a little bit, because I think that you've made a really good start, and that if there's any way I could, you know, feed in periodically with the staff, I'd always be very happy to do that. Did you get my little packet? I kind of just threw this together. It's not my best writing effort. I also want to include the documents I've been working with and the scientists I've been looking at, and one key one from which the list of a lot of the evidence and the problems with the endocrine disruption chemicals came out of this book. And I'm going to give a list of the resources I have to staff, and that they can send them to you also. But it really is incredible and has all kinds of references. And you read one thing and it leads to another. But the key point here, and the one that I brought up at the state level and at the time when they were doing the amendment to the recycled water policy, they didn't really take it seriously, was this group of scientists who were involved in determining the low-dose effect, and that the effect, what happens is that it's unpredictable how these endocrine disruptors are going to affect our biological systems in wildlife and humans. And so sometimes usually the assumption is the dose makes the poison. So you have a point in a risk assessment that indicates, well, over this dose is dangerous and it shouldn't be allowed, and under this dose is safe and it can be allowed. So there would be limits set. The problem with low-dose effects is that very minute amounts, parts per billion, and this is the work of Tyrone Hayes, and they may be making a movie about his work, because he's had this huge battle with Syngenta, the company that makes atrazine. And atrazine is the main chemical that is the most widely used, was it a herbicide or pesticide, in the world. And it's been known to turn the frogs, their reproductive systems, go crazy on this stuff. And so the point is, it only takes a part per billion range to have this impact in some situations. Also, pregnant mothers can transmit these chemicals to the fetus, and depending on the point in time the fetus is exposed, it will have effects that could be multi-generational. So it's an extremely serious problem, and I've listed some of the impacts that could be caused by this. And not all scientists are up to speed on this issue of low-dose impacts, but the Endocrine Society, which has been around 150 years and it has hundreds of endocrinologists as members worldwide, have made scientific statements that there is no controversy about the reality of this situation. And that's what makes it so difficult, because you can't say really that a small dose is safe. And what I was reading about the technologies, reverse osmosis and the advanced membrane and the ozonation, is that, I don't know how many of you know James Crook. He's quite well known. He used to be head of the State Department of Public Health, I believe. And he has stated in one of the things I read by him that the highest, most advanced treatment, they're talking about toilet to tap in San Diego, and they're building a system. And he said there is no system that takes everything out yet. I mean, we don't have it. And the point is, at some point you may say, well, there's no way we can do it, and we're just going to have to take the risk. But the point being, it's very important to get the information, to know what we're talking about, to be able to define the problem. And yes, there will be things that we can't deal with that are going to be a problem in the future, but we need to minimize. And I think source control is one of the most important first steps. And the thing with Santa Rosa's wastewater that I was most concerned about was the urban irrigation, that people were being exposed to this wastewater on the streets of Santa Rosa without knowing what the issues were. And that's why I've been so concerned about that. And then I know you're all probably tired and anxious to get home, and I'm sure I could find a lot more to say, but I'm going to say goodbye. And ask if there's any questions. Of course, I'm happy to answer anything.
Any board member questions or comments?
I think one thing that you said, Brenda, and I absolutely, I think all of us agree, but and we need to keep it in our minds. It is not that we can get rid of these things. It's to minimize them, and that is mm-hmm. the best that we will do. We have something like approaching 7 billion human beings on the earth, and they all take Excedrin.
Not for much longer, the way these things are reading. There are some countries where the birth rate is lower than the people on the, you know, it just, well, it remains to be seen.
But it is minimizing it, and I think that's the important part, that we recognize minimization is really the target for
us. Well, it's the best we can do right now, but I appreciate your looking into it and you're putting staff time into it.
Thank you.
All right. I just wanted to say thank you. You've been a clear and consistent voice to us on this matter, and I thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You bet.
All right.
Thank you. We then have executive director report, board member report.